Cue that fancy intro music. It's time to unleash your star power and own your dreams without selling your soul. It's time for some creative freedom. I'm Lisa Robin Young, and I'm a creative entrepreneur just like you. I'm also a business coach, helping people across the creative spectrum make great money doing what they love. If you're done with being the world's best kept secret and ready to shine like the star you are, creative freedom is for you. Let's get started. If you could have any superpower, what would it be? Not long ago, when people asked me that question, I would say invisibility, almost without thinking about it. I was about five, when I saw this made-for-TV movie that inspired my conviction about the power of invisibility. It was called The Girl, The Gold Watch, and Everything. I don't know if you remember that movie. I loved that movie. It was Robert Hayes and Pam Dauber. It was based on the novel of the same name, and the story follows a guy named Kirby, played by Robert Hayes, who inherits this watch from his rich uncle that allows him to stop time. Not strictly a movie about invisibility, but once you've stopped time, you can pretty much do whatever the heck you want. Rearrange people's clothing, get ahead in a race, whatever. You're invisible to everyone else while you're doing whatever it is that you're doing. So the sky is pretty much the limit. And for years after I watched that movie and its awful sequel, I begged my mom for a pocket watch so that I could pretend that I had a magic watch that stopped time so that I could be invisible too. Well, careful what you wish for. Nowadays, invisibility isn't my superpower of choice because I realized that for as much as I thought being invisible might be cool, I also very much wanted to be seen. I loved being in the spotlight, sharing my gifts, my talents, and knowledge to be able to help the world. And being invisible was really more about wanting to stay safe, which, as we discussed in a previous episode, is really an illusion and all about being comfortable, something kind of the opposite of what building a business is about. Being invisible, especially in your business, has advantages, some hidden advantages that you're probably not even consciously aware of. Staying invisible means you're not a target. It buys you time to practice or whatever, and it helps you be a covert spy of sorts in your market. You get to see what other people are doing without a lot of pressure on yourself. Being invisible takes the pressure off, but you can't stay there forever. Not if you really want to build a noble empire and leave a lasting legacy through your great work. Today, we're going to shine a light on these perks of invisibility so that you can make some empowered decisions about when to step into your spotlight and when to stay carefully tucked away in the shadows. And if you're ready to step into your spotlight, like you know, then I am happy to announce that we've just opened the doors to our Unleash Your Star Power event. It's a 3-day online event where I am peeling back the curtain on my entire Star Power method and giving you some spot coaching as you build your custom roadmap to becoming the celebrity in your space. What does it take to become a celebrity in your space? That's what we're going to talk about. And then you're going to have a clear roadmap. Why celebrity? Because celebrity status is the fast track to everything your heart desires, except anonymity, I suppose. The impact, the income, the freedom that you've been craving is all available to you when you are the celebrity in your space. When you're a celebrity, you get invited. You don't have to pitch or push. When you're a celebrity, you have brand value and you don't need to use slimy marketing tactics. When you're a celebrity, you have influence and the ear of an audience of raving fans who will help spread your message or buy whatever it is that you have to offer. And when you're a celebrity, you have plenty of money, enough to take time off to really enjoy the fruits of your labors and spend meaningful time with people and causes that you care about most. And frankly, I'd rather see fewer billionaire rocketeers capturing the attention and income of the world and more good people like you who are here to make a difference and stir some shit up. If you want the fast track to build your noble empire with more time, money, and the freedom to enjoy it, visit lisarobinyoung.com/unleash for more details. Let's talk understudies for a minute. And I'll link in the show notes to an article on money.com called Seven People Who Surprisingly Started as Understudies, which opened my eyes to a few famous folks who got their lucky break because they were the understudy for someone more well-known at the time. Now, most folks have heard of Shirley MacLaine's understudy story, so I'm going to skip that one and go for a few that you might not realize. Are you ready for some football? I don't usually, football is not my thing, but this works here, so go with me. Nobody expected much from Tom Brady when he came on the scene. You wouldn't think that, right? Knowing how amazing Tom Brady has become. But his stats in college, he went to the University of Michigan, my alma mater. His stats in college were nothing to write home about. He was just kind of average. And according to Wikipedia, Brady was selected in the sixth round of the 2000 NFL draft. So he just barely made the top 200 picks of the year. Nothing really to write home about. Even he was embarrassed by the fact that six other quarterbacks were picked before he was. He started with the Patriots, that's who drafted him, as the fourth string quarterback. Fourth! And he only managed three pass attempts for the season for a total of 6 yards in a game that they lost horribly to the Detroit Lions. And now I don't know a lot about football, but I know because I lived in Michigan and Detroit was our home team. The Lions are one of the losingest teams in the NFL. And my ex-husband is also a fan. So I learned a bit about the Detroit Lions. I at least learned that much. So if you lose to the Lions, you are really nothing to write home about. Although I will say that that was the year that the Lions came really close to making the playoffs. Close. But still, when the Lions beat you 34-9, I'm just saying that doesn't sound great. But despite that, Brady still managed to become the number two quarterback on the Patriots team by the end of that season. He became the starting quarterback for the third game of his second season, taking over from Drew Bledsoe, who had sustained life-threatening injuries during game two. Now, Brady rose to the challenge, and he eventually led the Patriots to their first Super Bowl title, with Bledsoe giving him an assist. But Bledsoe had been the face of the Patriots, essentially rebuilding the franchise for several years. He was their darling. But Drew never got his starting spot back when Brady took over. Eventually, he left the Pats and ended up playing only a few more years with some other teams before retiring. Now, you can also be an extremely successful understudy and stay in the shadows for years before you get your due. So how about John Oliver? He's the host of HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And he had already won an Emmy for his work as a writer on The Daily Show. An Emmy Award is no small thing, okay? Like, you've got some stiff competition in order to win an Emmy. And he'd been a comic for years, doing stand-up, developing a small fan base. And then he got this gig writing for Jon Stewart for The Daily Show. So after he'd already won an Emmy and was still relatively unknown to the world at large, he was called up from the minors, so to speak, to cover for Jon Stewart while Jon was off directing his movie. I think it was Rainwater, I think was the movie. So John Oliver filled in for several weeks, and his guest hosting gig got a lot of great reviews. And 3 months later, HBO announced the offer for John Oliver to have his own show, and the rest, as they say, is history. Taye Diggs, Bernadette Peters, Shirley MacLaine, and even Tim Cook, the Apple CEO, were all understudies of one sort or another. And being an understudy gives you the opportunity to keep honing your craft and perfecting your skills until you're called up from the minors, so to speak. But as I'm sure you're aware, something dire usually has to happen for the understudy to get called up. Somebody gets sick, injured, dies, and you've got to be ready at a moment's notice to pick up the slack and make magic happen. That can be kind of stressful, but it's a great opportunity to keep practicing until you're ready. And let's look at that untraditional understudy, Tim Cook, more closely. Just as Steve Jobs was making his return to Apple, he wooed Tim Cook away from Compaq, which is now, I think, a defunct company, to be Apple's senior vice president of worldwide operations. Now, that was 1998. And Tim had already started to build a legacy for himself in operations in other companies. And in all the time Tim was there at Apple prior to Steve's illness, he was this relatively unknown operations guy. Steve was in the public eye. Steve was the one in the papers being talked about, taking the heat for things that were happening both in the company and with him as a person. His rivalry with the CEO of Dell, the potential criminal charges for backdated stock options, Apple's slowness to move on recycling initiatives, his reputation as a bully, all of it was fair game for the media. And Tim stayed quietly in the shadows, head down, doing his work. Now, he got called up to the majors, so to speak, when Steve had his first health crisis. And the media still paid him very little attention because it was temporary, right? He was just filling in until Steve Jobs could recover. And Steve made it clear he was still around for key business decisions and anything mission critical for Apple. So it wasn't like they were really handing the reins over to Cook. He'd be going back to the minor leagues when Jobs was back in the swing of things. Now that was 2004. Steve returned to work, and Tim was eventually promoted to lead operations or chief operations officer and stayed there until Steve finally retired and named him as successor. While he was the chief operations guy, Cook stepped in a few more times while Jobs was recovering from other health issues, with Jobs still having responsibility for major decisions. And that's important because I almost have a mind to think that that was a PR move. I mean, God forbid anyone but Jobs could be in charge of Apple. We have to let them think he's still in charge even if he isn't. So we'll say that he's still making all the key decisions. And maybe he was. But do you see how that basically undercuts Cook in the public eye? Oh, since he's not really making any decisions, he's just a warm body in a chair and he's really still only doing the operations gig, which is boring and unsexy, so we'll just keep ignoring Cook. No one was really paying any attention to Tim Cook, who is now known not only as the Apple CEO, but the first openly gay CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and you can bet that has drawn some attention and even some outrage, some ire from some people who are like, oh, right? Had they been paying attention, they would have known that Cook was gay before he ever stepped into the CEO role. It was only because he stepped into that role that anyone in the media started talking about it, because it had been reported years ago and he never made an official announcement. So it was just kind of whatever. But now that he's CEO and he's come out, oh, now we've got to talk about it. Staying invisible means you're not a target. You can screw up while you're practicing and nobody's gonna notice. You can just live your freaking life and nobody cares. You're not gonna get called out or canceled if you're the understudy because nobody is watching you. There's comfort in that. You're small potatoes, so to speak. You're a nobody in the eyes of the world. And the media couldn't care less about what you're up to because you're not the one to watch. So nobody's watching. They've never even heard of you. And that takes a lot of pressure off. Nobody's watching your every move, so you can make some mistakes and nobody's really keeping score. And while it's true that no one can see you when you're invisible, it also means that no one can see you when you're invisible. You're not having the impact. You're not making the money. You're not reaching the people who need you the most because they can't see you. And like I said earlier, being the celebrity, being seen, means you've got impact. You make an impact. People care about who you are, what matters to you, and they get on board with that. Apple, since Cook took the helm, is more focused on philanthropy and environmental issues than it ever was under Jobs. Cook's concerned about cybersecurity and the stockpiling of personal data by big tech, and he's made moves to do something about it. Cook was also on the list of the 100 most influential people in the world, according to Time magazine. If you want to step into the spotlight, then at some point, you've got to be ready, willing, and able to have all eyes on you. That's what the spotlight's for, after all. If you're not ready for it, then by all means, stay in the shadows and keep practicing until you are. Keep getting better and better at what you do. It took Tim Cook decades to step up to Apple CEO, and he was anonymously doing his best work with his head down until that time. Which also highlights another point. The shadows are what give us this overnight success myth. Tim Cook didn't just come from out of nowhere. He was a staple at Apple, like I said, for decades. He just seemed like an overnight sensation when he stepped into the CEO role, but he'd been groomed for it. That's why he could double Apple's revenue and wow shareholders practically from the minute he stepped up. He was already ready already. Let's look at one last understudy, one of my favorite composers, Leonard Bernstein. By most accounts, the earliest surviving piece of music from Bernstein was written when he was about 17 years old. And Lenny wouldn't get his big break until he was about 26, almost 10 years later. So what was he doing during all that time? Well, going to school, improving his craft, and learning from the masters of his time. He graduated with a Bachelor of Arts from Harvard, with honors no less, and then went on to the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, then the inaugural year of Tanglewood Summer Music School, and there he continued his studies and eventually became the assistant conductor during the subsequent summer seasons. Now the rest of the time, he did odd music jobs, teaching voice, playing piano, transcribing music, publishing his own works under a pseudonym, whatever he could do to keep the bills paid. This was, you know, the 1940s, 50s version of the hustle, right? The hustle and grind. Then at 25 or 26, he was appointed the assistant conductor of the New York Philharmonic. Basically, a glorified understudy. An assistant conductor rehearses the orchestra for the director, but they rarely conduct a paid, what they call, subscription performance. They may also do lesser performances like a youth ensemble or an educational event. Assistant conductors also have quote-unquote other duties as assigned by their lead conductor, which basically means they get the grunt work and are expected to do it with a smile and very little to no recognition. The assistant conductor works with the orchestra, and then the conductor comes out for the final dress and the performance like they've been sweating this stuff for weeks. The assistant conductor makes the conductor look good. That is basically the job description. So here's Bernstein. Barely a few months into his job when the guest conductor for the evening falls ill. Bernstein had never rehearsed this set with the orchestra, so all he had to go on was the notes that he'd made from cramming the night before just in case. So he had gotten a call from the artistic director of the Philharmonic saying, hey, Bruno Walter is ill. You don't think we can get the conductor in because I think he's going to be snowed in. So we may need you tomorrow. And Leonard Bernstein is like panicked. And the dude was like, well, you know, okay, just in case, like probably it'll be fine, which is code for it's really not going to be fine. Right. So he crammed the whole night before just in case. And then Lenny met briefly with Bruno Walter, the guest conductor, who gave him a handful of conducting notes about the various pieces. And then he was on his own. Right. So he had gone to Walter's place. Walter is sick, like bleh, sick. And Walter almost said, no, I don't want to see you because I'm so sick. But he was like, well, I guess I got to tell this guy something. Right. So he comes over, gets the notes, and then he's on his own. And by Bernstein's own account, he was scared out of his gourd until his foot hit the stage. And then he remembers nothing from the performance until the applause at the end. A performance so noteworthy that it was the front page headline of the New York paper the following day, and he don't remember a thing about it. He just channeled the whole thing and blacked out. Can you imagine? Oh my gosh. Staying invisible buys you time. And since no one is watching, you can keep practicing without all the eyes on you, without people second guessing or armchair quarterbacking you. And what to many people seemed like Leonard Bernstein's overnight success came from decades of practice and honing and refining his craft, studying the scores and doing the freaking work. Luck is where preparation and opportunity collide, and Leonard Bernstein capitalized on it, even if he wasn't really feeling up to it. When no one is watching, you can keep testing and tweaking behind the scenes. In fact, when Bernstein got the call telling him that he may have to step in, he was finishing up the New York premiere of a song cycle that he had previously premiered at a library in Massachusetts. So he technically premiered it twice. So likewise, when you're invisible, you control the narrative. You control the messaging out in the world about you, your team, your organization, your brand. And once word got out that Bernstein was a master, it was hard to put the genie back in the bottle, so to speak. Everyone was remarking on his abilities. Until then, he was content to be the unassuming assistant conductor in the sharkskin jacket, just conducting from the piano. And now he had a style. He was a trendsetter, even if he didn't want to be. When you're invisible, you're probably still the only one making things happen, or everything still has to run through you first. Being the bottleneck and having control gives you the ability to see every step in the system, which is great at first when you're still testing. At some point, though, you've got to turn that system over to your team or you'll still be doing all the things. Plus, you stay a best-kept secret and probably stuck in perfectionism, which means you never ship and you're actually robbing us of your genius. Speaking of secrets, here's the other benefit of staying invisible. Recon. When you blend in with the paint, you can be a spy. When no one knows who you are, you can be a fly on the wall and see what everyone else is up to, if you can get in the room in the first place. In the wide world of the interwebs, we have social media platforms, website search tools, and lots of behind-the-scenes breakdowns and takedown videos that show you what's going on under the hood of your competitors and collaborators. And you can watch how someone you admire rose to stardom and take copious notes for your own launch plan. And because you're a relative nobody, ain't nobody paying attention to you while you do it. I went to an event years ago to hold the purse of one of my clients. Basically, she was worried that the coach hosting this event, who was a very slick marketer, would talk her into spending 5 or 6 figures for a year-long program that she knew she wasn't a good fit for. But she wanted to go to meet people, to learn from other speakers that were going to be in the room, and spend some time in California. So I agreed to be her financial chaperone, and nobody knew anything other than we were friends that had come to this coach's event. And I did my recon before we went. They had written a book, this coach, so I read it, and it was horrible. So bad, in fact, that I left a review on Amazon so that other people wouldn't make the mistake of falling for this person's attempt to sell a book that was a thinly veiled pitch for their annual event, the same event to which we were heading. And I've talked about using your book to pitch your crap in a previous season. It's awful. Don't do it, okay? It was not a favorable review. So imagine my surprise when the coach took the stage and at one point in the middle of the workshop, they started talking about how you'll have haters and then singled out my Amazon review, not knowing that I was in the room. They went on to say all kinds of inaccurate things about how I was probably jealous, unsuccessful, and just trolling their book. I didn't say a word. At least not until we were invited to table discussions for networking. You know, okay, you guys, you're all at your tables. Talk amongst yourselves and get to know each other kind of a thing. When someone asked me who I was, I said rather plainly, well, I'm the coach that was just slammed from that stage. And I honestly can't believe what was just said about me because it's completely not true. I'm not jealous. I'm angry because that book is dangerously incomplete. And I said so in my review. In fact, I'm here holding my client's purse so that she doesn't get sucked into the six-figure pitch that's coming at the end of today's sessions. And you could have heard a pin drop from my table. Now, nobody knew I was there. Nobody would probably expect that someone who actually hated the host's book would hop on a plane and spend 3 days in the same room with that person. It was a great opportunity for me, though, to talk to attendees, learn about why they were there, what they liked about that coach, and see if there was anything that I could apply to my own work. There is a time and a place where seeing what others are doing is helpful, where developing your own best practices away from prying eyes is helpful. At some point, though, you've got to transcend blueprints and cookie cutters and shine in your own spotlight. And there are plenty of musicians who pattern their careers after famous icons that they admire, moving to the same town, playing in the same small clubs, watching all the documentaries. All of that can be very useful until it becomes an avoidance technique that's keeping you from greatness that comes from developing and sharing your unique voice, your unique message, and building your noble empire. So by all means, go ahead and stay under the radar for as long as it serves you. There's gold to be mined there. Skills to hone and refine. Rehearsing and practice to be done. You can watch what others are doing and take notes to apply to your own improvement. You can even position yourself to take a leadership position when your mentor steps down, if you're willing to wait that long. But when staying in the shadows becomes an avoidance technique, when you're tired of watching everyone else rise up while you stay a best kept secret, then it's time to step up and shine like the star you are. Let the world really see you. Warts, sparkles, and all, as I like to say. build your audience, grow your reach, and unleash your star power. The world is waiting, and every minute that you stall, hiding out when it's past time for you to step up, you're robbing us of your genius. And next time, we'll explore exactly how to do that. What needs to happen for you to break through to greater visibility and stop being a big fish in a teeny tiny pond? Be sure you're subscribed to get notified, hit the bell, kiss your mama, leave a review, whatever else is the hot thing these kids are doing today, so that you'll know about our upcoming episodes. And I sure hope that we'll see you there. And until then, for more inspiration and education to help you unleash your star power and own your dreams without selling your soul, come see what's shaking over at creativefreedomshow.com. You know you want to.